Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So lawmakers wandering around from the House and Senate, saving the world, they claim, but miserable about it. Yes, we would call predictable irrationality. Listen to Barack Obama talking about his motivations for voting for the package last night.
There will be time to punish those who set this fire, but now's not the time to argue about how it got set, or did the neighbor sleep in his bed, or leave the stove on. Right now, we want to put out that fire.
Well, what do you want, a fireman, or do you want revenge? Is it irrational for the House not to pass the bailout bill? We're talking about irrationality and when you've been punished or rewarded for it. Have you bought a house on a whim, asked someone to marry you, quit your job? Tell us your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. Well, all this contradictory feeling and irrationality is a job for Dan Ariely, who's a Duke University professor of behavioral economics and former member of the MIT Media Lab. First of all, Dan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Which do you want in a situation like this? Do you want revenge more, or do you want a fireman more?
Well, the question is, me as what? Me as a human being or me as a scientist? And it turns out that those things are different. But let me tell you a little bit about what we know about revenge. And the story is actually quite interesting. There's a game that behavioral economists and economists play with our participants in experiments, and it's called the trust game. So imagine, John, I gave you $10 and I had $10.
Right.
And I said, John, you have a choice. You can end the game now, both of us will go home, or you can pass me the $10. If you pass me the $10, it would somehow magically quadruple on the way. So if you send it to me, I will have $50, my original 10 plus your 10 that became 40.
Right.
I can do one of two things. I can split the money and give you $25 and keep $25, or I can take the $50 and go home. The first surprising observation is that unlike what the economic standard model would predict, that people would be selfish and say that the other person will never give them the money, so they should never trust them, people are actually surprisingly trusting. Hmm. They pass the $10, and surprisingly people split the pie and give $25 back. However, this game becomes more interesting when you add an opportunity for revenge. Imagine that I decided not to pass you back the $25. I keep all the $50 and I go home. And now you have a chance to punish me. But this is a punishment that would cost you money. For every dollar you invest, some entity will take $2 from me. You invest $3, I would lose $6. You invest $7, I would lose $14. Would you take revenge against me?
Even though even if it would cost me money. All right, let me think about that. Go ahead.
Turns out a lot of people take revenge. And what's more interesting is when you image their brain, when you look at what kind of brain activity they have when they decide about revenge, it looks like they have activation in their brain in the same place that process pleasure, the same place that gets activated when we take heroin and have sex and eat food.
The polling on this bailout plan, when Americans are calling up Congress and saying, don't vote for it, don't vote for it, they're willing to pay tax money to punish bankers on Wall Street who they believe they need to exact some revenge from.
That's right. And I think the parallel is very appropriate here, that the bankers in Wall Street have in some sense walked away with our $50. I mean, it's actually been more than $50, right? But they've in some deep sense, people feel, have betrayed the public trust. And now people are willing to lose money. You know, if I have a small portfolio, these bankers have a big portfolio, I'm willing to lose 10% if these guys would lose 10%, for them, it will be so much more.
We were talking before about the irrationality and the dilemmas that senators face voting for this bailout bill. But I wanted to talk with you about the irrationality in the broader economic system that got us to this point. What sort of irrational elements in the economic system motivate, say, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of bad loans to be put on the books of banks like Citigroup and Merrill Lynch?
Yeah, so there's a lot of reasons for this irrational behavior. You know, there's one way to be rational. There are many ways to be irrational. Let me give you a couple of examples.
Great.
A few years ago, I also, until recently, had a position in the Federal Reserve Bank, and my job there was to try to argue with the local rational economist about different ideas. And we were asked to write a paper about interest-only mortgages. So here's the story. If you're going to buy a house for $400,000 and you took a regular mortgage, your payment might be $2,800 a month.
Right.
If you got it on interest only, you would pay maybe only $1,500 a month, but at the end of the 10 years, you will owe $400,000. For the standard rational economist, this was a good deal. Why? Because it means that people have more flexibility. You pay less, and the extra $1,300 you have, you can choose to put toward the principal, pay health care, even pay your credit card bill. And in fact, one of my friends in the bank went ahead and found some data showing that people who had bigger credit card debts were more likely to take interest-only mortgages. So he said,
people who were more in debt?
Yes. And he basically interpreted it as people being smart. He said, look, these are smart people. They got bad debt with credit card. They're going to take a cheaper loan, interest only, and they're going to pay off the credit card bills.
Yeah, well, did they?
Now, no. But I did a different study, and I basically tried to look at how people actually decide how much they can borrow. So let me ask you, if you went to buy a house tomorrow, how would you figure out how much house you should buy?
Quickly, I just write zero, you know, because I'm so strapped. But you know, I mean, I bought a couple of houses, and that calculation was strange and scary each time.
That's right. And actually, what people mostly do is they go on the web, and they go to one of these mortgage calculators,
right,
and they figure out how much they can borrow. Mind you, it's not how much you should borrow, it's how much you can borrow. It's how much the bank will give you.
That's exactly what we did, yeah.
So now imagine that now when I come to the bank and I get interest-only mortgage, I'm not restricted to $400,000, I can borrow $550,000. Well, if I borrow more all of a sudden, I get not extra flexibility. And that's actually what people did. They basically just stretched the borrowing, increased their exposure in the market. So that was one thing we did very badly. We basically gave people too much flexibility, including the flexibility to fail. But here's another interesting story. There's something we call hyperbolic discounting. It's the fact that it's very hard to resist temptation in the near future and very easy to resist temptation in the long term. I'll give you a simple example. Have you ever gone to lunch thinking that you'll watch your weight and then the waiters come with a dessert tray, you smell the chocolate souffle and you succumb to temptation?
Of course.
Yeah, that has happened before.
That's an easy question, Dan. Mm-hmm.
That's an easy question. Well, it turns out some bankers came up with a loan that looks very much like chocolate souffle. It offered people 2 years of very cheap loans followed by 28 years of very expensive loan.
That's like
In fact, I just recently met somebody who's now stuck with the 28 years of paying 12% interest.
Oh my.
But because he had such a low interest rate in the beginning 2 years, he basically took this terrible, terrible loan. So that's a second story.
I guess the question is, you know, not only for the borrowers, but for the banks. What is rational about the banks doing this?
So there's a few things. One is that people, I think, assume a lot of wisdom on the part of the market. As a function of that, they do all kinds of crazy things as long as people are willing to buy it. There's a new book that came out recently called Billion Dollar Mistakes. And in this book, they describe a story about people who decided to give mortgages for mobile homes. Mortgages for mobile homes used to last only 10 or 15 years, and this company decided to extend it to 30 years. Well, it was more appealing to people. The payment every month were lower, and many, many people got these mortgages for 30-year loans on mobile homes. Well, mobile home turns out not to last very long. In fact, they don't last much beyond 10 or 15 years.
So banks were giving loans for houses that last a third of the length of the loan.
That's right.
That's crazy.
Now, somebody else was willing to buy the loan from them. So there was a whole incentive to sell this crazy loan because nobody was really looking. Nobody was really paying attention to what these loans are. People assumed, oh, other people are buying it. It must be a great thing. As a consequence, the company increased in value about 40 times. Luckily, they sold off way before the loans came to expire.
And when nobody's sort of watching, when people don't have to watch the assets, things can grow indefinitely, and nobody really is accountable until sort of things crash. And that's kind of the situation that we're in right now. Dan, hold on. Then we're going to get some headlines. Dan Ariely is with us from WGBH in Boston, but now we have headlines from Richard Hake.
And John, good morning. It's now 28 minutes past the hour. The House will face a revised financial bailout bill for a second time this week. The $700 billion plan plan passed in the Senate yesterday. The new draft includes business tax breaks for the use of renewable fuels and would allow more than $20 million middle-class taxpayers could avoid as the alternative minimum tax. The EU will establish a security force to tackle the increasing number of pirates off the coast of Somalia. The French government says at least 8 countries have agreed to participate. Meanwhile, Somali pirates continue to hold a Ukrainian ship carrying 33 tanks. They're demanding $20 million in ransom. U.S. nuclear envoy Chris Hill is extending his stay in North Korea to hold more talks today. North Korea caused alarm earlier this year by moving to restart its military facilities. And how do you get young people to the polls? Well, you take some celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio, you make a video, you put it up on YouTube, and then tell them not to do something.
Please, just don't vote.
Don't vote.
Don't vote.
Don't vote.
No, seriously, don't.
You don't care.
What's the point?
Don't.
Don't vote.
Don't vote, really.
But the stars soon twist the message and say voting is a civic duty.
It's like one of Dan Ariely's experiments there.
And that PSA will apparently flood the internet because DiCaprio is urging everyone to send it to 5 friends when they get it.
Great. And so he just also says, don't go to my movies.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's that'll be his new one.
Thanks, Richard.